I think the NATO project was one of the most important things that I did and pushed as president.
30 years ago, President Bill Clinton visited Prague to push for the expansion of NATO. Now, his advocacy led to the inclusion of the Czech Republic, Hungary, and Poland. I'm Sky Nohusen on this edition of 360 View. We are going to discuss the continued power the 42nd president of the United States has on global policy and whether he is beneficial or a liability to the current president on the campaign trail in the United States. Let's get started. There is the warm and fuzzy life of a former president presented to the public. And then there's the real story of what a former president is doing, not only to hold on to power, but still use it to gain a seat at the table or dollars in their own bank account. The re-election of Bill Clinton to a second term was the end of the Democrats being known as the Workers' Party and the beginning of the transition to the woke party.
Government should do more, not less. The preeminent mission of our new government is to give all Americans an opportunity.
Policies which were focused on being corporate friendly with a shade of social liberalism, taking the focus off the working class, something the Democrat Party had been the champion of since the Industrial Revolution. Now, one of the largest pieces of legislation passed under President Bill Clinton was the North American Free Trade Agreement between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, and was greatly protested by labor unions. Now, President Clinton also deregulated, as well as pretty much eliminated, the oversight of Wall Street. This was a move which many experts actually believe led to the 2008 crash of the stock market and the economic recession which followed. Now, his wife, failed 2018 presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, is currently producing a new Broadway show which focuses on the suffragette movement.
Say, producer, and I will show up.
But when she is not on Broadway or in the media, continuing to question the results of the 2016 election or complaining about this one.
Can we talk about the upcoming presidential election?
Oh, no.
Yes, we have to. What do you say to voters who are upset that those are the two choices?
Get over yourself. Those are the two choices. One is old and effective and compassionate, yeah. Has a heart and really cares about people. And one is old and has been charged with 91 felonies.
She's working with her husband in one of the pretty much most known celebrity nonprofits, the Clinton Global Initiative, which boasts on its own website more than 4,000 projects and partnerships affecting people in more than 180 countries worldwide. Now, the latest country to roll out the welcome mat is Ukraine, where CGI Ukraine Action Network was launched last fall in a collaboration with Ukrainian First Lady Olena Zelenska. But maybe this was more of a return the favor, as the Clinton Foundation was made a five-year commitment by Ukrainian businessman and oligarch Viktor Pinchuk in 2008 of more than $29 million. It is complex to find the exact amount which has been raised or where it has all gone to from the Clinton Global Initiative, but we do know the endowment is in the billions. But with the effect President Clinton has had on domestic economy, it's a wonder why foreign leaders continue to open up their doors and their own economic policies to the Clinton Global Initiative. So let's dive into and discuss what power is held by former President Bill Clinton with our panel, radio and podcast host and director of the Center for Regulatory Freedom at the CPAC Foundation, Andrew Langer, and John Jackson, who is the former chairman of the DeKalb Democratic Party. Thanks for joining me, gentlemen. You know, I want to start with you, John, on this. So is the former president, Bill Clinton, still a rock star within the Democratic Party today, like he was during his presidency?
I think it depends on who you talk to. If you're talking to your older primary voters who are going to vote Democratic no matter what, absolutely. Not necessarily with younger progressive voters or some of the voters who are uncertain about turning out in November that the Democrats need to turn out in order to win. He's very much considered part of the old guard establishment of the party. And some of his policies from his presidency aren't even popular with the Democratic base of today.
Well, that's interesting you say this. And so I've got to run to you, Andrew, on this. Do you feel like, from a Republican standpoint, that having Bill Clinton out is actually helpful to basically those independents or even those more establishment Republicans that are having a hard time voting for Trump, that they like to see what the old time was and remember a nicer time between Republican and Democrats that existed under Bill Clinton?
I'm not so sure that Bill Clinton is particularly persuasive to Republicans who are never Trump Republicans, per se. I think Bill Clinton getting trotted out is really about what John says, really about shoring up the establishmentarian base, right? Joe Biden has a real tough road to hoe going into November. Not that Donald Trump doesn't. But in terms of making sure that he can appeal to both the very progressive wing, you know, the folks in Michigan and Wisconsin and Minnesota who are concerned about, you know, Joe Biden's policies towards Israel, while at the same time assuaging the more moderate, more pragmatic segments of the Democratic Party, the old school, the establishmentarians, the corporatists. I think you laid it out really well, how the Clinton-Gore era ushered in the new Democratic era. So I think it's less about going after the so-called Never Trump Republicans, really about making sure that they shore up the widest cross-section of the Democratic base going into November.
Well, and in this case, you actually have a power couple, probably one of the more modern-day power couples, because you had Hillary Clinton also involved. John, do you think Hillary Clinton's loss actually affected both of their standings within the Democratic Party?
I think so. I think Hillary is good for raising money. She's good for making sure that your Democratic super voters get involved with the election, but she's not going to bring any new votes to the table or anyone new to the coalition or Joe Biden.
And how do you see that, Andrew? Because Hillary herself, is that just a reminiscent for Trump? Does that kind of like easy game for him since he's already well practiced in going after her?
I think it's interesting because, you know, you think about it, Hillary Clinton really is an aberration when it comes to Democratic nominees for president, right? I mean, you know, yeah, she was senator from New York and she was Secretary of State. We could talk a little bit about her tenure as Secretary of State. But the reality is, you know, she represented the last sort of machine politician in terms of running for office. Yes, she had the benefits of being a woman, and a lot of Democratic women voters wanted to see that. Listen, the reality is that the Clintons of 2024 are very much in the vein of doing what's best for the Clintons, you know, whether and the Clinton machine and the interplay between the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Global Initiative and Teneo Holdings and whatever other business interests that both Mr. and Mrs. Clinton happen to have. It's really about that. And yes, you know, Bill Clinton wants to step in there and do the things that he does as the former president of the United States and wield that power. But it's power that's wielded very carefully and generally in ways that benefit Clinton Inc.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Andrew, because I'm going to stick with you on this question, because you're talking about the Clinton Global Initiative, those sorts of things, and we'll get to that in the next segment. But I have to wonder, are there certain things, though, that helps Joe Biden with Clinton being on the campaign trail? Are there certain groups, demographics, or even states, maybe southern states, because Joe Biden does not do well in the southern states at all, that Clinton still has that appeal to?
Listen, I don't know. I think that in terms of going after those base voters in those southern states and making sure that they come out, I'm not sure Clinton quite has that cachet. Sure, he was governor of Arkansas, but he stopped being governor of Arkansas in 1992. And I don't think he spent a whole heck of a lot of time south of the Mesa, well, obviously in D.C., south of Washington, D.C. in all that time. Clinton is very, very much, both Clintons are very, very much New York politicians, Northeastern politicians, California politicians. Really, the cachet is making sure that they go after those establishmentarian voters within the Democratic base who might otherwise be concerned about Joe Biden leaning more towards the progressive left.
So, John, we've just recently seen all three Democrat presidents, well, the current president and the former presidents all together. Do you feel like there might be any animosity right now between Clinton and Obama, considering how popular Obama and his wife still are, and obviously beneficial to Biden being out? Do you think that there's any animosity? The Clintons are kind of, per se, jealous of that. Do you think they're upset right now? They feel like the Obamas could have done more to help Hillary get elected in 2020. What's the inner party dynamic right there?
I think there's always been some tension because Obama pulled an upset on Hillary in 08. She was supposed to be that nominee, and then She did not, she was not able to repeat Obama's success. She's never really had the charisma that Obama did. And that's why Obama's coalition was much larger and why Obama was able to get reelected. So I think, yeah, there's always going to be a little bit of tension there. But, you know, I think that publicly or even privately, you're not really seeing much of that animosity, but we know it's there.
Well, it's funny because publicly, unlike the Democrats, the Republicans are not, you're not going to see Donald Trump campaigning with former presidents. Andrew, why is that? Why is that that Republicans seem to not be able to accomplish, even if there's animosity between them, they're not going to appear on the same stage. Why can Republicans not put that aside for the greater good of the party while Democrats can?
Well, listen, I mean, some of it is about grudge holding. And you know, in terms of the Democratic power structure, it's always been much, much more hierarchical. And by that, I mean, you know, they've been much better about getting people in line. You know, machine politicians and machine politics generally comes out of Democratic cities and Democratic states. And the reality is, I mean, listen, the reality is, you know, both political parties and politicians in both political parties have an incredible capacity to hold grudges. And I, listen, I can't speak to what happens inside, you know, state and local Democratic Party apparatuses. I know that, for instance, when I was a Republican Party official in Maryland, I used to think that the Republican Party in Maryland was the most screwed up Republican Party in all the nation, given the amount of grudges and backbiting and backstabbing that could occur, until I realized that every Republican Party in every state is the most screwed up Republican Party in the nation. I don't know about it on the Democrat side. I do know they're better about getting people in line. Republicans are not quite as good at that.
Well, I'm going to keep you on here because there's a picture that's circulating a lot, and it's about, it was actually at Donald Trump and Melania's wedding. You have Bill and Hillary, great conversation. They were good friends even prior to that point. Do you think that actually helps or hurts Donald Trump to be that tied close to the Clintons? Is that something that continuously they bring up, that he was a Democrat?
Well, I mean, and that's just it. It was one of those things where when Donald Trump was running in 2016 and every Democrat was disclaiming any donation that they had given to him, I would have taken that much, much more seriously had they given those donations back. Right. They kept the money, which, you know, that's what politicians do. No, I mean, I don't think any of this holds water. They tried this way, way back when in 2015, 2016. Certainly it was tried in terms of trying to deny Donald Trump the nomination in 2016. It didn't work then. I don't think it's going to work 8 years down the road.
Well, it's interesting. Jack, Andrew, I want you to stay right there. A historical fundraiser in New York City brought in more than $25 million and featured former Presidents Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. Do people really care about what Bill Clinton did while in office? And if so, why is the Clinton Global Initiative still as active as ever if it was so bad? We're going to discuss after the break.
The balance of power in the Middle East is in flux. Israel no longer has its vaunted deterrent supremacy. What is called the Axis of Resistance is challenging Israel and, importantly, its Western patrons.
Welcome back. I'm Skynell Hughes, and you are watching the 360 View. I want to start the second segment with the protest, which erupted outside the campaign fundraiser in New York City, with the three top Democrats, President Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and Bill Clinton. However, while most of the large protests outside the Radio City Music Hall, as well as a few scattered inside the hall, were about the current role of the Biden administration in the Gaza conflict, protesters also pointed out the long trail of blood all three presidents had left around the world. Let's discuss with radio and podcast host and director of the Center for Regulatory Freedom at the CPAC Foundation, Andrew Langer, and John Jackson, who is the former chairman of the DeKalb Democratic Party. Thank you so much for staying with me through the break. John, I'm going to start with you, because Bill Clinton was easily reelected. But is that because people were not as concerned, or maybe didn't even know as much about the foreign policy, like the bombing of the medicine factory in Sudan, until several years later? Was he more sheltered, do you think, from the public, because we didn't have as much access to information with the internet like we do today?
Yeah, I think politics was a different game back then. You didn't have the sound bites, access to the sound bites from social media that went viral like you do today. And I think Democrats were more viable in different states back then. When you think about some of the states that Bill Clinton won, I think that he was also a very popular president. So I think that it was just a very different era of politics than we are in right now with just the mass communication you get via the World Wide Web.
Well, Andrew, from a Republican's or even from the right side of the aisle's perspective, as they're watching what was going on outside of the optics that went on outside of Radio City Music Hall with all of the protesters, the ones that were going inside, are Republicans actually enjoying this protest that's happening from within their party, something that happens often on the Republican side? Are they capitalizing on this from an election perspective, and are they basically using the conflict happening in the Middle East to continue to chip away at Joe Biden's popularity within his own party?
Well, I think it comes down to certainly this idea that Republicans are much, much more unified on Middle Eastern foreign policy than perhaps they are on the Central European foreign policy. But to get to, back to your question to John, you know, there are a couple of things that were going on. And John's right that some of this has to do, and you're right that some of this has to do with the transmission of information, the early stages of the internet in 1996. Let's not forget that Bob Dole was an incredibly weak candidate, perceived as very angry. And then when it comes to foreign policy at the time, right, you know, we were still dealing with this milieu, as it were, that politics for the United States ends at the water's edge, that sort of we generally were agreed on as a nation as to what, you know, the U.S. was doing foreign policy-wise, the idea of, you know, building democracy abroad, especially in light of the you know, the ending of the Cold War. And that really didn't change until after 9/11, the election of George W. Bush and folks' posture towards that. And then, of course, the second Gulf War, which I think changed a lot of people's perceptions as to how foreign policy and U.S. foreign policy can impact partisan politics. So there was a lot going on then. And yes, we're certainly in a much different mold. Yeah, I mean, listen, will the Trump campaign capitalize on dissent within the Democratic ranks? Sure. The question is whether or not that'll really matter to the average Democrat voter.
You know, Andrew, you bring up a really good point that I want to expand on right there, talking about how when you're looking at back then, it seems like foreign policy, we were a lot more unified. I think Republicans and Democrats were all together. It was like whatever conflict we were on outside of our borders, party lines didn't matter. We were going to support the troops, whatever they were doing. John, do you think, when did that change, do you think? Do you think that's how we see it now? Because now it's this president got us into this foreign conflict. This president got it. And that's sort of the chain that was connected between Clinton, Obama, and Biden, is all the foreign conflicts that the three of them were able to get us into. It's now become more of a political issue necessarily than a unification, almost patriotism issue.
I think it comes down to how popular the conflict is. I think, you know, Vietnam was just uniformly unpopular on both sides of the aisle. And I think in the era of George W. Bush, you had quite a few Republicans who at the end of his administration weren't in support of all the countries we were in. And there's, you could say that Trump is more part of the anti-intervention wing of the Republican Party. And he often clashes with what you would call the Bush neoconservatives. So I think it's going to come down to how popular the conflict is and what the general public feels about it. And I think when it comes to Gaza, which the U.S. isn't directly involved in, it is indirectly involved in, I think that you've got folks on the left and the right who are pro-Palestinian, and you've got folks on the left and the right who are pro-Israel. So sometimes it's not always simple to define it across party lines. And I think Trump's actually making a play for left-leaning voters because he's very critical of Benjamin Netanyahu. He sometimes shows empathy for the lives of Palestinian people. I see him kind of making a play for some left-leaning voters and showing he's not really completely one side of the issue.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, and I want to stay on this because you do bring up Israel. And one thing that I personally see as being very damaging to the Clinton brand, the Clinton, is everything that's come out about Jeffrey Epstein. Now, granted, it's a slow trickle on that. I know Republicans obviously bring up Epstein a lot, John. How much does the Epstein files really resonate within the Democratic Party? Do they care about potential damage it could do to not only Bill Clinton, but any of their candidates that are over the age of 40?
I don't think we've gotten the full story on Epstein. You know, they've dropped all these names, but we don't have any context of what happened. I'm not sure we're ever going to find out context of what fully happened with all the names that were dropped. It seems like anyone who might have been involved in something foul is getting protected. That's my opinion. So I'm not sure it's going to have an impact because I don't think we're getting all the information about that.
Well, and that's the one thing, you know, you hear Republicans, Andrew, talk about Epstein a lot. They obviously throw out Bill Clinton every time they throw out Donald Trump's name. Is this something that needs to continue to be pursued politically from the fact of, does this damage Democrats when you're talking about Epstein and Bill Clinton's involvement?
Well, listen, just to go back to the question you had for John, I think Democrats only care about Jeffrey Epstein insofar as they can make the case that Donald Trump was on the Teenage Express or whatever we would call it out to Sex Island. But beyond that, they don't particularly care. I think Republican voters are much, much more concerned in the end about what was actually going on with the Biden White House and the Biden vice presidency and what was going on with Hunter Biden. And they would be much better served by sticking to that. Right. Listen, we do, as a general principle, need to get to the bottom of what was going on with Jeffrey Epstein and the various elites that were traveling to his island. But in terms of the context of the politics of it, the Republicans should remain focused on Joe Biden and the Biden family, which incidentally is like a mini version of Clinton Inc., right? I mean, I think the Biden family was aspiring to be as successful at the Clintons at, you know, pairing policy and politics and money and making scads of money at it. But Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and Chelsea Clinton, they are the masters and mistresses of all of this.
Which brings us to talking about the Clinton Foundation. You know, John, I've got to ask you, why does the Clinton Foundation still exist? I mean, there has continued to be these controversies regarding projects, specifically like the one in Haiti. The accusations of tax fraud, misuse of donations down there, money not actually going to the people that they fundraise it to. Is this damaging? Why do countries still open their doors to the Clintons, considering they probably don't have much power, much connections in the White House, as we've kind of discussed already, but they allow them to kind of have free reign of their country and raise donations that don't necessarily go to the street?
I think while they don't maybe have much power in government anymore, they still have a lot of social capital. They can still make things happen for people because of they're connected to people all over the world. And, you know, I think that the Clinton Foundation is, you know, a lot of ex-presidents have foundations or whatever, and the Clintons are unique as they have used their foundation to get filthy rich. And that's really what it is, a vehicle for the Clintons to get rich and to wield their power. You know, they're big on the game of power, and they still wield a lot of power in different circles. And I think that's really what the Clinton Foundation is about at the end of the day. And I think more liberal, progressive folks in the Democratic Party aren't necessarily fans of it.
Well, it's interesting because it seems like the more time in any of these scandals that happen, people kind of forget about or push to the side. It's like, oh, well, that happened 20 years ago. We have enough problems today. But Andrew, there was a whistleblower who actually came out and put in a memo. Bill Clinton mixes and matches his personal business with that of the foundation. Many people within the foundation have actually tried to caution him about doing this. He doesn't listen, and there really is no talking to him, is what this whistleblower came out and said. How much does this damage, and why isn't Congress actually looking into it, investigating the actions of the former president, even if they have nothing to do with current policy? Why are they not looking into what is happening today with the foundation?
Well, they've tried to do it, and it didn't go anywhere. And you go back to when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, and the relationship between Huma Abedin, we all know, you know, her right hand, and a guy named Declan Kelly, who was at her left hand as a special envoy in the State Department. And the fact that at the time that Huma Abedin and Declan Kelly were both working for Hillary Clinton at the State Department, they were also working for an entity called Teneo Holdings, which was a for-profit lobbying organization with major corporate clients, of which Bill Clinton was the honorary chairman. And so you had the interplay between donors to the Clinton Foundation, who were also clients of Teneo Holdings, who were doing business with the State Department. You have Huma Abedin and Declan Kelly and others. And so this goes before Congress, and they have some investigations, but nothing really comes of it. There's no accountability. At the end, Hillary Clinton loses the 2016 presidential election, so Congress figures, you know, that's it. Why bother continuing this any further? To me, that was always, by the way, the greater scandal that needed to be investigated in terms of Hillary Clinton. It wasn't the server. It wasn't Benghazi. I mean, those were important. But it was, again, getting down with what Joe Biden was doing as vice president of the United States, the self-dealing to the benefit of oneself and one's family by using their official positions. These are the things that we need to actually have investigated. The reason why they're not being investigated now is because Hillary Clinton hasn't been anywhere near an office. Bill Clinton hasn't been anywhere near a government office forever. And by the way, Scotty, real quick, because you asked about why folks are still supporting, it's because the Clinton Foundation can get huge sums of corporate money, whether it's clients of Teneo or others, and donors to other foundations like the Rockefeller Foundation, et cetera, and connect those people with folks in power in those countries who make huge amounts of money. There's a reason why, and let me add, they don't want to solve these problems. Because if you solve the problems in places like Haiti, then you can't make money off of fundraising on them down the road. And that's where the 100%. Money is made. It's on the fundraising and the corporate right. interests and perpetuating the problem.
So I'm going to give John the last word on this. John, what role do you think the Clintons should be playing within the Democratic Party, not only this election year, but any role moving forward?
You know, he'll never do this, but he should sort of step aside and raise money for the next generation of the Democratic Party. He can't speak for the Democratic Party anymore because, frankly, there's nothing to gain from it. People who like Bill Clinton are already going to get out and vote for Joe Biden. And so he needs to step aside, just continue to raise money. Don't be a surrogate. You're not going to help bring new people to the coalition. Just raise money for Democratic victories.
Well, I am grateful to both of you for allowing me to capitalize on your knowledge of the Clintons and their influence on the current political race. Andrew Langer, radio podcast host and director of the Center for Regulatory Freedom at CPAC Foundation, and John Jackson, former chairman of the DeKalb Democratic Party. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 View. Thanks for watching.